Welcome to the Amazing Relationships Podcast with Kim Wilson, a space designed to help you create amazing relationships with yourself and others. Get ready to experience hope, love, and inspiration. Here's your host, Kim Wilson.
Thank you for joining the Amazing Relationships Podcast. Today's title, The One Chosen Among Many. We're talking building positive relationships in challenging situations. It can be difficult to bond with others if they do not relate to you in the right way. To help us unpack this topic, we have special guest Mo Hamilton. She is a retired federal agent with an extensive 19-year career in both state and federal law enforcement. Her expertise includes courtroom prep and testimony, undercover operations, strategic planning, logistics, dignitary protection, officer survival, and defensive tactics. Ms. Hamilton is also a certified fraud investigator with the International Association of Financial Crimes Investigators and technical investigator with the National Association of Technical Investigators. Ms. Hamilton, welcome and thank you for joining us on this podcast. How are
you? Thank you. I'm great. How are you, Kim?
I'm doing amazing. Let's get right to it. So you have an extensive background in an area where a lot of women have been historically comprised of only a small percentage, which is law enforcement, and that's across the nation. So my first question to you is, what made you follow the path of law enforcement?
Well, Kim, I'm so glad you mentioned the word path, because that's exactly how I look at it. It was part of my path, the will of God that directed me to that direction. I certainly went to college with the true intention of becoming an attorney. And when I was also an athlete in college, so when I decided that I could not live in a library nor dedicate myself to truly become as an effective student in that area, I changed my major into sociology, and I decided that I couldn't sit behind a desk. I could not dive into a library. It just wasn't who I was at that time. And so I really did not know what my future was going to hold. I did not know exactly at that point what I was looking to do. And I think athletics had a great deal to do with that decision. I was in probably the most impeccable shape of my life. I accidentally played three sports on the varsity level in college at Hampton University. And I just was very physical, and I needed a job that was physical. So I think at the time, my intention later towards graduation was to look at becoming a special agent. I don't know what movie was in the theaters, but being a special agent was sexy. It was depicted as the job that everybody wanted to have. Like I said, I don't know what movie was out, but I wanted to be a special agent, and I initially looked at the FBI and realized that I didn't have any experience. You know, at bare minimum, you had to have an undergrad degree, but people were competing not only across the United States but across the world for these sexy positions, if you will, in my mindset at the time. And so I realized that I needed more in my repertoire, and out of nowhere, someone that I don't even remember, this is how insignificant it was at the time, they said, hey, Virginia State Police is hiring. And now I must tell you that I was working multiple part-time jobs. I was teaching part-time. I was working at a hotel. I was just a workaholic towards the end of my collegiate career. And when I was approached about the Virginia State Police, I had no idea they, one, existed, and two, what they did. Now, I'm from New York originally. I left New York at the age of 17, the tender age of 17, didn't even have a driver's license yet, and came to Virginia to play basketball at Hampton University, ultimately playing varsity volleyball and track. But one of the things that I looked at in hindsight is the path changed. When that person, that unknown person, approached me with an application in his hand. He had an actual application in his hand. And he says, why don't you try the Virginia State Police? And I said, what do they do? I had no idea what the Virginia State Police did. And he told me, oh, they work accidents on the road. And I thought, well, that's not sexy. But when is the application due? And he said, tomorrow. So sometimes our path is not only dictated by what we choose, but it's dictated by what we do to get there. And so the one thing I said in front of him, and I can remember this because every time I say it, something happens. I said, if it's God's will, let it be done.
Let me jump inside of this. A federal agent, when we hear federal agent, I know at least when I hear federal agent, that seems like a tall order. I mean, so the title of this podcast is One, the One Chosen Among Many. Being a federal agent, talk to me, how difficult was it to build relationships in a male-dominated industry as a woman? What did that time period look like when you first became a federal agent?
Okay, well, we can't go to the federal agent without acknowledging the state police, because that was my first track. I was trying to lead to that.
I'm sorry, Bo.
That's fine. I know the agent is very sexy in career, but the state police went, so I put in the application. Like I said, if it's God's will, let it be done. Next thing you know, I'm at the academy. I'm the only female among many men. And there were about 73 of us total. The academy lasted approximately 6 months in Richmond, Virginia. We actually lived at the academy. We came home for one day on the weekend. Now, there's no prior law enforcement in my family that I could recall. None. I had no one that I could go to that I trusted to learn about this job, this career, this new path. It was totally new to me. And when I learned I was the only female, there were four women initially, but they all dropped out one by one very quickly. And I guess that their goal is to weed out the weak. These women eventually came back later, but I was the last one standing. And I have to tell you, Kim, that the way that I was raised, I was raised very independent. I'm the youngest of four, but my mother really only had to put food on my table and clothes on my back. I mean, I can remember at the age of seven, I've had like four different activities going on at one time. I went away to camp upstate New York by myself in the mountains. I really wasn't afraid to try anything new. Really wasn't. I just was thrown into things just all of a sudden. So this was not scary for me. To be the only female, that wasn't scary for me. And it's probably because of the way I was built. I mean, I was in impeccable shape, better than some of the men, physically. And so any physical activity I could do. The one thing I was worried about was shooting, because I, again, did not have prior law enforcement experience, never had anyone in my family that were in law enforcement before that time. And I never wanted to fail. You know, my whole life, whatever I tried or whatever I attempted, I never wanted to fail. I just wanted to do my best, and if I couldn't be the best, it was okay because it was my best and it was good enough. But the shooting was something different. Culturally, it was different. Most of the men in that academy class, the 94th basic session of Virginia State Police, were what we call legacies. Their great-great-grandfather was a trooper, or their father was a trooper, their uncle was a trooper. So when you look at the state of Virginia and how diverse it is, you see a lot of different accents. You have to remember, when I went into the academy, I still had my New York accent. So here you have the only female who happens to be black, who happens to be from New York, has no experience, never picked up a weapon. And here I have to survive this academy and learn how to shoot and survive the testing. The testing was arduous. You're having to take a test with 10 topics per week. I had to memorize every part of a gun. Not only did I have to shoot with great proficiency, but with great physical task taking. So not only did I have to work with men, but I had to survive just on my own recognizance and my own abilities and skills. So the men were like secondary in the academy. They weren't my primary problem. My primary problem was survival. And that, you know, I've had a few guys that may have said something, but you have to remember, I'm in impeccable shape. I'm educated. And I made friends very quickly. I'm very friendly, so I made a few friends very quickly of different nationalities. And you just, it's everybody's trying to survive. So it's really
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Well, how did you, you said you make friends very quickly. How did you make friends quickly? How did you do that?
Well, there are opportunities for us to have some downtime, and I really don't know how it happens. I talk to anybody, and I think that's a book that I will soon write, is that, you know, no matter where you place me in this world, I'm going to have a friend or two because I just get along with people. There are going to be those that are intimidated by me, which is why I really believe in my heart the women that were in the beginning there left, because I could do one-armed push-ups, I could climb ropes, you know, I could do the things that most females could not do because I was an athlete. And so I think they left because the pressure was greater for them to not only be up against the men, but against a very physically strong and articulate female. And so with the women who were there for a couple of weeks, I did not get along with because of that fear that they had of me. As much as I tried to accommodate and, you know, get to know them, they put a barrier up right away. But the men, we were all in it together. And there were, like I said, a handful of them. They happened to be prior military. They were older. I got along great with them. And I really don't know how they initially began. I think in the whole academy class, there were 3 black males and myself. So as far as minorities, there were just a few of us. There was no clique. I mean, we didn't go out to eat together. It was just you found a couple of friends and you got along. And I really don't know how it got started, but we're friends till this day, actually.
Well, you just said 2 powerful things that stuck out to me. This podcast is about developing amazing relationships. One of the things that you said that just caught my ear, you said that some of the women, they were intimidated by you.
Yeah.
So how, when you think about developing professional relationships and relationships inside of the workplace, if somebody is intimidated by you and that serves as the barrier, I mean, you know, since we have no power in controlling how somebody reacts to you, what they say or they do, once you identify that this person is intimidated by you, I mean, do you become less of yourself? How do you set yourself up in the workplace when you realize that people are intimidated by your excellence?
Well, this is the thing. You have to be secure in yourself. There is always going to be someone better than you. No matter how great you think you are, there is someone right behind you that's going to take your place when it comes to being the best. If that's all that you're concerned about, you're going to have a very disappointed life. Because there is always someone that's going to be stronger, faster, better, smarter. There's just always that person there. You know, I think of the first woman that became a Virginia State Trooper in 1976. Her name was Cheryl Nottingham. I have to imagine what life was like for her, because out of the whole department, she was the only one. And she was a white female, but the point is she was the only one. Now, the title of today is The One Chosen Among Many, because they had to choose me to be in the academy. And so I made it. And so did these other women. But when we got together, you have to remember that the scene is unlike a work environment, a regular work environment or a corporate work environment. It was a means to an end. We had to survive. It was a means of survival, which is a whole nother session. And when you have a means of survival, you have what's called like tunnel vision. You don't have the peripheral vision to see every 73-person smile or frown or sadness or joy. You're focused on your own survival. So because I was in a room with these women, I shared space with these women, they coalesced together as a team, hence separating me. And so it wasn't hard for anyone to walk into a room and see that difference. You know, when they're doing everything together, they chose to stick together, whereas I was left alone. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a survivor. You know, I was raised in the projects of Brooklyn, New York. You know, I was busy. It was a rough lifestyle. But I tell you, when you look back on your life, you always see those opportunities where they're just missed, and it may not have anything to do with you. But I suggest that you be authentic in everything you do. And what's meant to be will be, and what's not won't be. You know, everybody can't be your friend. Everybody can't be your best buddy. You know, you are the company you keep. You have to be very decisive when you look at your inner circle. They could be part of the outer circle, but they can't be in that inner circle because they can't be trusted. They do not have your best interests at heart. This was a very competitive atmosphere. Just like it was with the Feds. The Feds was a little different. I hope we touch that today because the difference between the state and the Feds is significant. The Feds will hire you because you have a varied background. You don't have to have prior law enforcement. You could have came from a bank. You could have been a teacher. So our backgrounds are different. But yet we still have to do the same job. So I was a former state trooper. That scared the heck out of everybody. Because now, not only do I have the experience, the degree, but they're looking at a job that they couldn't do. And they're frightened of it. Not me personally, but what I represented.
And so,
that was interesting.
So when you started working on the state level and you felt like they hated you and you could feel that, how did you manage
that? It was the federal level.
The federal level, I apologize.
Right.
How did you respond to that?
I was shocked because, first I got a taste of it when I went into the academy. The academy was 12 weeks, a lot shorter than 6 months. The academy was 12 weeks. Everything that they did in the academy was law enforcement related because it's a federal law enforcement job. So guess what? I feel at home. It's easier for me. I know how to shoot because now I've been shooting for almost 8 years. So you have new people coming in, have never picked up a weapon, the same experience I had from before. And, you know, when we did scenarios, I'll never forget. You know, they were very sophisticated with technology, so when they divided us into groups and we did scenarios outside, the class was inside. They could see on TV what we were doing outside in real time. And they actually paid actors to come in and perpetrate to be the bad guy or the good person. And in the scenarios, we had to work on our decision-making, our quick decision-making and all the skills and techniques we had learned to that point. And I was like, I really can't explain it. I was so advanced in my expertise that it was too much. You know, I always told you I try to do my best, not to be the best, but the best that I could be. And I was like, when we had a suspect, because I was a trooper and learned how to do it on my own, I was sliding across the car with my weapon drawn, putting people in arm locks, you know, placing them on the ground. The instructor was like, come here, Pitbull. And he pulled me to the side. He said, sweetie, look, we know that you protected the governor of Virginia. We know that you are no one to play with. But we need you to scale that back about 70%.
Now, our time is winding down together, but there are a couple of things I just want to get to. You said some powerful things earlier. One thing that caught my ear, you said that you have to be authentic in everything that you do.
Yeah.
So I think that's very key in building, especially in the workplace, the amazing relationships with others. You have to be authentic. And then you said you are the company you keep. And we certainly can take that on the personal level and the professional level. And something else caught my ear when you said, you got to have a teammate mentality when your supervisor said, you know, we recognize that you can do all that stuff, but I need for you to scale that back about 70%.
I was like a pit bull at the gate. I'm keeping it real. You know, I can look back and laugh, but, you know, when I was going through it, you know, I always wanted just that's the way I'm built. is to do my best. And it has nothing to do with being the best. I think people get that false perception, because our perception is our reality. They get that false perception that Mo is trying to be the best. No, I want to do my best. There's a big difference between the two. And if my best exceeds your expectations or that of others, then it is what it is. I can't change my ability, my talent, or my skills. And even when I was the best, I didn't get credit for it, sweetie.
Well, one of the things that I like that you said earlier, too, is you can call a trooper, some of your troopers, anytime today, even though you're retired, and they will... Yes, and they will come for you. And you said that's genuine love. And that's what a great relationship is all about. When you build great relationships with people, you can always reach out to them. You know that they are there for you and they have your back. And we're running out of time, but I do want to get to dignitary protection. Mo, talk to me a little bit about dignitary protection. What dignitaries?
By the grace of God, Southampton County was an experience on its own. I was there for about almost 3 years. My mother had passed away during that time, so I really was trying to leave the state police, honestly. I just didn't think it was my future. And the colonel of the state police at the time, Colonel Michael Wayne Huggins, he had a photographic memory. And because he had a photographic memory, he knew the one thing I was interested with the state police at the academy was to work on the executive protection unit. It was the most elite unit in the state police across the country. It is the most elite. The list is endless of people that want to be in that particular office, and it's equivalent to Secret Service. All you do all day is protect dignitaries. I had the privilege of protecting Governor Jim Gilmore III, and now Senator Mark Warner, who was governor at the time. But when you asked me earlier in an email, what's the one thing that's a takeaway for you, I would say protecting Coretta Scott King. In November of 2001, Coretta Scott King came to the Commonwealth of Virginia at the Capitol, where we placed a memorabilia into the Capitol area in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And my boss came to me and said, you are the head of her protection. And so you have to realize we just had 9/11 happen. And she comes in November. So when you find out you're protecting someone, you don't get a lot of notes. So it was just a great experience. I was really all she had for protection. And it was a privilege. We've had private conversations together. I met a lot of celebrities. We traveled across the world. In fact, my first overseas travel was in Scotland when the governor and his family went on a family vacation. Mm-hmm. So it was a great experience. But I tell you, it definitely protecting Coretta Scott King was the highlight, because, I've rubbed shoulders with presidents of the United States. I actually accidentally knocked over Condoleezza Rice.
Oh, no.
Yeah, my bad, Condi. If you're listening to this podcast, my bad. But definitely Coretta Scott King and her nobility, her quiet and stillness of, you talk about authenticity, she epitomized integrity. It just oozed out of every part of her body, and she gave me several trinkets and reminders of that time. And, I never asked for a photo with her, but the only photo I have with her is when the butler of the mansion at the governor's mansion in Richmond, while she was getting ready to leave, he was holding the door open. He says, wait a minute, Mo needs a photo with Coretta Scott King. And that's the photo that I have in memory of that detail. So out of my entire career, that's probably one of my highlights. Some other highlights would be working great cases that helped many victims. I always look back on my career and I say, here's a career I never wanted. And you mentioned it in the beginning. It was a path, and all of us have detours along our path. I'm recently retired from a knee injury, but I have close to 20 years of experience, and I never thought that I wouldn't make it to full retirement. But God saw fit to alter my path, put a detour in my path for me to do other things. So I'm grateful for the experience. I'm saddened by the depiction that law enforcement has today in our society, which is really encouraging me to write the book so that people understand we're human beings behind the badge and not all of us are the bad guys, so to speak. But I just appreciate and honor the women that came before me, the Cheryl Nottinghams. I'm looking at the Virginia State Police yearbook in front of me, the first female to die in the line of duty for the Virginia State Police was a black female in 1988, Jacqueline Vernon. I honor her for the path that she provided for me. There's so many who paved the way and made it a little bit smoother so that when I came behind them, it made all the difference. And so you talk about building relationships. You have to, because in this profession most especially, it depicts masculinity just from the uniform. We all wear the same uniform. It's a tie. Never thought I'd wear a tie in my entire lifetime. But that was part of the uniform. And when you approach a vehicle, at first glance, in their rearview mirror, you're a male, because that's all they see. I've actually approached cars, and when I say, may I see your license registration, they bust out into laughter, or they become shocked. I get a very strong reaction because they don't expect it to be a female. It's a very, very physical, very dangerous and difficult job. On the federal level, again, it's more of a team mentality, so there's more greater numbers when you approach a dangerous situation, but it's still dangerous, but not nearly as dangerous as a state trooper. If you were to say to me, Mo, would you go back to the road today, I would say you're crazy. Times have changed.
Well, you know, we are completely out of time and over time, and I want to say, Mo, thank you so much for joining me today. What do you have coming up? Where can people find you?
Well, they will be able to find me on the website at mohamilton.com. That's coming out soon. I will be writing several books, one of which is about this particular topic. And I'm also a speaker and coach. So I provide private coaching as well as teaching and public speaking, communications, and leadership. So I'm out there. I'm available, and I do public speaking events in communications and leadership, which is where my education is as well as my expertise. So thank you for asking. But I'm definitely looking to write and helping to inspire other women, other young people who may choose this path, and hopefully give them the guidance that I didn't have going in to help them build stronger relationships and have a fulfilling career.
Thank you so much for joining us. Be sure to check that with us daily. You are listening to the Amazing Relationship Podcast with Kim Wilson.
Thank you for listening to the Amazing Relationships Podcast with Kim Wilson. Want more? Visit kwspeaks.com. That's kwspeaks.com for the latest inspirational blogs.